When you're with Amex Business Platinum, you have the card that helps you do more of what you love. Like a flexible spending limit that adapts with your business. And with 5x membership rewards points on flights and prepaid hotels booked on AmexTravel.com, going the extra mile for your business is even more rewarding. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Not all purchases will be approved. Terms apply. Learn more at AmericanExpress.com/AmexBusiness.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
Earners, what's going on? Listen, EYLU is relaunching, revamping, retooling. That's right. We're creating a new educational experience that's more expansive. Shotty, tell me what we got.
Yes, 2023. We got a lot in store, a lot planned for you guys. So you know that EYLU already includes monthly financial planning calls with me, book club calls with Troy, real estate calls with MG the Mortgage Guy, access to the Home Buying Blueprint, Volume 1 and Volume 2. Part of the revamp will include 27 local chapters from across the United States, live interactive teaching, hands-on, not just pre-recorded videos, plus 15 brand new curriculums.
The biggest just got bigger.
Head over to EYLUniversity.com. That's EYLUniversity.com. See you there.
Okay.
Oh, you're back.
Yes, welcome back to part three.
Yeah, man.
Of our how-to series. 2 weeks ago, we talked about real estate.
Yeah, shout out to MG.
With MG the Mortgage Guy.
Yep.
And all things you need to know about buying a home. Make sure you check that episode out.
Absolutely.
And last week, we had a great episode with X.
I think great's an understatement.
For sure.
Absolute classic.
Talking about artificial intelligence, something that's very, very important. Timely walk. A how-to, really, on artificial intelligence, you know, everything that you need to know. So keeping in theme with, you know, the educational series that we've been doing on these Thursdays, tonight we're going to be talking about a very important topic and another, you know, one of these topics that we don't learn about in school and causes so many problems. You look at so many entertainers that owe millions of dollars on taxes, and so many people go bankrupt because of taxes. Mm-hmm. And just so many people just don't understand how to actually, you know, play. The tax code is very complicated and it changes all the time. So you can never just have one understanding of the tax code. It has to always be updated. Yep. And there's millions of dollars that can be potentially saved and lost if you don't understand taxes. So we're going to be talking about taxes tonight. Very important.
Yeah, in the words of Lauryn Hill, ain't about what you cop, it's what you keep. And it's good to make the money, but it's mostly important, more so important, how you manage to keep the money rather than paying it in tax. And we already know about state tax and federal tax, income tax, all types of tax. We're going to be covering a plethora of information. So we're in for a treat, another one.
So without further ado, let's bring up our good friend.
Let's do that. Miss
Business.
Yes, yes, yes.
Hello, hey. Hello. Thank you for having me again and again and again.
And again, you know, the last time we went on the educational journey with you, it changed the way that people were consuming and buying vehicles.
I know. I say that all the time. I'm like, we did that video back in 2019. I feel like from then, I have seen so many different videos. Everyone's an expert. Everyone's an accountant now.
Change the game.
It definitely changed the game.
Let's do it again.
For sure. So Miss Business with Brooks Alliance, CPA, right? So you're actually qualified to speak about taxes, not just somebody that does it part-time. Has their own firm and has worked with businesses and individuals for a long time. So somebody that we've developed a great relationship with, she's done InvestFest every year. Mm-hmm. Been on Earn Your Leisure multiple times, Market Mondays, and actually works closely with us on our taxes as well. So our tax advisor.
Yeah, so your CPA could never.
Could never.
For sure. So first and foremost, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yes. All right. So it's a lot to go over in this session. We want to go over, you know, how business owners can save money on taxes, how individuals can save money on taxes. We're going to go over retirement plans. We're going to go over, you know, payroll, putting your kids on and all that type of stuff. We're going to actually go over actionable items that you can actually utilize to, you know, make your life better when it comes to taxes. Let's get into how people can actually, you know, save money, learn about tax code deductions, what, you know, what is most important for the average person, right? So
yes.
Where do you want to start?
Let's start talking about the cycle. Let's talk about the cycle of reducing taxes. And I love this quadrant because it makes it so easy for people to understand exactly where you are and what is the cycle and how do you actually go about saving on taxes and what does that look like? And tonight I want to basically touch all of these topics so that way people can get like full picture in terms of like, hey, this is, you know, this is what you really need to do if you want to save on taxes. And I tell people all the time, if you really follow the strategy in terms of how to actually save, you will really set yourself up for the future, which I'm really scared about because I find that not enough people are investing for their future. You know, we're in this space where everybody's like hustling and trying to figure it out. And, you know, they're starting these businesses and operating these businesses. And then no one's really thinking about retirement. But if you think about how taxes go and the things that you can invest in and what helps you save on taxes, you would have no problem, one, being wealthy, and two, saving on taxes. So let's talk about the cycle of reducing your taxes, okay? So first you start out, right? This is my flow. This is you guys' flow too, right? In terms of how it went, right? You guys, well, not Rashad. Rashad, I know you talk about all the time. I don't think you ever had a job, right? No.
Company line, we're sticking it to it.
Okay. All right. So for most people, this is how you start. You are, you know, you start out as an employee. And then once you start out as an employee, I want you to understand that one thing about the tax code, the more you work, the more taxes you pay. It just is what it is. So another thing about being an employee is you don't have much flexibility. So when I say you don't have much flexibility, what I mean is your pay rate is your pay rate. Your tax rate, right, is your tax rate. There are some deductions, which we'll talk about, but there aren't many, right? There aren't many for employees. So the taxes that you pay are kind of set, right? Now, then what happens is you move into being self-employed. That's when you give yourself a job. Right. You give yourself a job. You don't really have much help. It's just you. You're wearing so many hats. Now that's when you start to form your LLC. You may convert over to an S corp. That's when you start taking advantage of deductions. You may implement some sort of retirement account in place. And so that's when, you know, it's you. And now you're starting to catch on. You're like, all right, cool. Then what happens is you become a business owner. A business owner, this is where you have you have way more flexibility. You now have employees. You're now delegating things. Everything isn't on you. Then that's where you may switch over and find it beneficial to be a C corporation. Now you have employees. You're able to take additional deductions because now you're able to benefit them, you know, by whether it's bonuses or. And that's what we talked about on the when I was a guest. We talked about Amazon and how they were able to reduce their taxes. And a big part of it was the stock options, right? And the value of the stock options that they were able to reduce their income, right? So now once you start getting employees, now you're playing a whole nother game, right? Because now you're able to contribute and you have stocks and all that, those things. Then you contribute to like higher type of retirement accounts. And then you go to being an investor. Being an investor is the ultimate tax hack. I tell people all the time, everyone does not love real estate. Real estate is not the best business, right, in the world. However, it provides you a lot of tax deductions and benefits. So a lot of people, when they get to a certain point, are like, okay, I'm going to have to get into real estate. So yes, some people enjoy it and it is an amazing tool and an amazing resource, but I want people to also think about what are the things that you have to do or the investments that you have to make in order to help you, you know, live tax-free. The same thing goes with investing in the stock market. It's passive. It has a lower tax rate. So even if you put your money if you made the exact same money in the stock market that you made in W-2 income, you would be paying like a much lower tax rate. Like I just told you guys, somebody could have a gain. A married couple could have a gain in the stock market of $90,000. They would have to pay zero taxes. Well, if they made W-2 income, they would be looking at, on the federal side alone, about 25% in taxes, right? That's not including state, right? Like me, live in New York City, right? Mm-hmm. Local, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So now you have all of these different taxes and, you know, it can be pricey. So when we're talking about reducing taxes, I want us to talk about like the flow and really understanding that we have to look at everything. So before we start talking about business owners, let's just quickly talk about what tax deductions are there for individuals. And then we'll go on to being a business owner, because honestly, starting a business is a tax strategy for people that have W-2 income, right? And when I say starting a business, that could be, you know, starting a business, that can be investing in real estate, but you have to do something, right? I always say, if you want to kind of change your tax situation, you got to change what's happening, right? You got to change your facts and what's actually being put down on paper if you want to make that change. So let's talk tax minimization as it relates to individuals, right? So you can do things like invest in municipal bonds, long-term capital gains. So I like to list long-term capital gains because a lot of people that are looking for a way to say, hey, well, how can I take my income and generate additional income and not have to pay as much taxes? So again, we talked about this, you know, a good amount already, just investing. That is one way that can be done. Starting a business. So we'll talk about that on the next, well, we'll continue to talk about that, just like being a business owner and how you can shift a lot of those expenses that you guys are paying with after tax dollars and shift it up into your business. So now it's a tax deduction, right? There's major power in that. Maxing out your retirement plan. So most people are not actually maxing out their retirement plans at work. That is done with before tax dollars. So if that's done with before tax dollars, go ahead, invest in your retirement plan. So therefore you're able to get to maximize on your money and take advantage of that compound interest. So employee benefits, HSA accounts, and then your tax credits, right? So your earned income credit, your American Opportunity credit, child and dependent care credit. So all of those are credits. One credit that I did not, well, one really good deduction that I didn't put up here, which I just thought about because we were talking about real estate, is the homestead exemption credit. For all of my individuals that are selling their property, right? So I talked about 1031 exchange. A really good one for individuals when they sell is they are able to exempt up to $250,000 of a capital gain if you're single, right? If you're married, you get to exempt up to $500,000. So I've had clients in so many different scenarios where there was one client, she literally sold, she had a property, 11 and a half months. She sold the property. And I'm like, it was 1 year and 11 and a half months. Okay. And the exemption, I mean, the credit says that if you live in this home 2 out of the 5 years that you've owned it, that you get to exempt this $250,000. And so I was like, oh my God, why didn't you call us? Because now what happens is because she sold it before the 2 years, now she can't. Right now, she can't take advantage of the credit. But had she just known and held on to it for freaking 15 days.
Yeah. She's 2 months away.
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah. No, actually, she was 15 days. It was 1 year and 11 months. She only needed to hold on to it for 2 years.
Dang.
So she would have been exempt from taxes. You know, so it's like knowing things like that is really important because, again, you're giving away money. Be offended. I want people to get offended. I always say, if I came to you and said, listen, I want 20% of your house sale, sell your house and then give me 20%. You would be highly offended. You probably want to punch me, right? Like you would be highly offended. But when it comes to taxes, people don't understand it. So they just be like, okay, I'm going to just pay it. But I want you guys to get offended and really do whatever you feel that you can do to minimize your taxes, which is just have the conversation, right? With your CPA or your accountant. And if you can't have that conversation with them, then that means that you need to fire them, right? Because then that means that they're not for you anymore.
All right. So yeah, so we're going to get into different type of tax deductions in detail. First, everybody hit the like button and share,
please.
We're about to get deep into it, but let's go over just the actual brackets if we can before we go into the different type of strategy.
Yeah, so brackets are important, right? Brackets are important because when you fall into a particular bracket, that is going to determine the amount of taxes that you are going to pay, right? So earlier I talked a lot about, hey, well, you know, if you had a couple that was investing in the stock market, and if they were invested in the stock market, then they would be able to, you know, they would be able to make $90,000 in income and pay zero taxes. But if you had that same person that was like married, right? They, what are we looking at? Okay, well, we're looking at 12%, right, in taxes. So I want you guys just to understand, as I mentioned, the harder you work, the more taxes you are going to pay. So at the top, what you see under earned income, this is my W-2 earners. This is my business owners, right? That are, that have LLCs, that has S corporations, partnerships. This is your tax bracket. Okay. So it can be as low as 10% and it can be as high as 37%. What you have below is your investment income. So your investment income can be as low as 0%. Right. And then it can go as high as 20%. I want you guys to realize, do you realize that no point is your earned income not taxed at all? You see that? It starts out at 10%. That's it. From 0 to 11, like it's going to start out at 10%. So I want you guys to just really, really understand, like, you know, what this really means. And then I want to highlight the corporate tax rate, because I know I spoke a lot. Just about the corporate tax rate and it being much lower. So somebody may, you know, look at this and be like, okay, well, I'm not going to be an LLC. I'm going to be a corporation. But you have to just hold on. Let's talk about corporations and how they're taxed. So corporations, the business itself, does pay 21% in taxes. So they do pay 21% in taxes. But what happens is a corporation deals with what's called double taxation. Right. So every person that invests in a stock, what happens? They invest in this stock. The company, let's just say they invest in Apple. Apple files their corporate tax return and Apple pays taxes. Right. So Apple pays taxes. Then what happens is they send you dividends. And what happens when they send you a dividend? You got to pay taxes on it.
Unless you reinvest it.
You can reinvest it. However, you have to pay taxes on the dividends that they send you, right? They're going to send you your form. They're going to send you, have to file the dividend income that you receive from this business. So that's what's called double taxation. So you as a shareholder, right, you have to pay taxes, and then Apple had to pay taxes. So that's why ultimately, just forming a C corporation may not be the best idea, because now you're paying 21% on the corporate side. And now if it's just you in the business, you are the shareholder. So now that then goes over to you. So now you're looking at an additional 20% on the dividend income.
So let's talk about that before we move on, because that's a question a lot of people have as far as LLCs, S corps and C corps, the differences and what is most beneficial as far as taxes.
Absolutely. So my rule of thumb is if you are making anywhere, and this is profit, guys, if you are profiting $35,000 or less, you should be an LLC. Let's just give it a number. So let's just give it one number. I would say $40,000 or less, you should be an LLC. $40,000 to about $450,000 in the business, I would say an S corp. Anything above that, the $450,000, now it's time to consider being a C corporation. right? So, and we'll talk about the reasons and why. So with an LLC, with an LLC, what happens is you are the owner, right? Your profit is seen as your payroll. So because your profit is considered your payroll, what happens is that you have to pay Social Security tax on that profit because they're looking at it as your payroll, right? So if they're looking at it as your payroll, they're like, all right, well, you have to pay Social Security tax and Medicare tax. So you can have one person that has making $100,000 in this LLC. What's going to happen is that you have to pay self-employment tax, which is 15.3%. So off the bat, you're paying $15,300 alone in self-employment tax. I call it the invisible tax. Everybody doesn't know they're paying this tax. Mm-hmm. And so like, we'll show them their taxes and they're like, oh my God, I never knew that I was paying that tax. So it's a separate tax from income tax. So then what happens is you have to pay that self-employment tax, which is made up of your Social Security tax and Medicare tax. And then what happens is you still have to pay your income taxes on that money. So now what we do to reduce the amount of money that we're paying in self-employment taxes is we will go ahead and we will start an S corporation. So we'll convert our LLC over to an S corp, right? So just keep in mind, guys, S corporation is not an entity type. It is a tax election, which means that if you're an LLC, you will need to fill out form 2553. And when you fill out form 2553, you would then be able to send it into the IRS and they'll acknowledge you and say, okay, we'll allow you to be taxed as an S corporation. But what does that mean? What are the requirements? The requirement is one, you have to put yourself on salary. You have to pay yourself a salary. And the other requirement is you have to file your taxes every single year, regardless of how much money you make. It's not an option. That differs with an LLC. An LLC, if you make $400 or less, you don't have to file. That's fine. With the S corp, it doesn't matter. You have to file your taxes. Okay, so that is something that's really, really important to understand. Now, corporations are great because with corporations, you're able to do, you're able to have your corporate. So I just talked about the double taxation, but what some corporations will do, right? If you're building or you have any sort of research and development or any plans in place that you intend to do, what corporations have the ability to do is they are able to issue what's called a plan and say, okay, well, we're a technology company and we plan to, I don't know, invest in some AI and it's going to do all these things. In order to do that, I know we have a profit of $2 million, but we need to use $1 million of that for this. What happens is you are then able to draw up a plan and show how you're going to allocate those funds. And when you do that, then you'll be able to basically back out that income. So now you would only be paying taxes on $1 million of it. Right. So they're able to do that. They're also able to give out stock options. So that's how the Amazons, the General Electrics, the Googles, that's how they're able to save so much in taxes, because now they're giving out stock options to their employees. Right. Which is a tax benefit to them. So those are like when you should be doing those things in terms of income. And I did include like a little bit of strategies in there as well. But yes, that's when you should be kind of using those.
You know, when we were younger, man, we would go out to eat. And this is kind of like one of the benefits of being around an entrepreneur when you're an employee working in a school district. And Rashad would always ask, yo, let me get the receipt. Let me get the receipt. And I had no idea why he was taking the receipts until I started to get educated on the process. And I'm like, oh, man, that's why he's taking the receipts.
That's why he wanted
like the receipts. I was like early 20s. It's like really like 20 years ago at this point. And it goes to the point where now you see a lot of people, entrepreneurs, they're in business or they're, I'll take that. I'm going to write this off. I'm going to write that off. Can we just get a breakdown on the things that actually qualify as things that can be expensed? I remember being a teacher and saying, I'm going to buy sneakers and that's part of my uniform code. They're like, that's not how it works.
You cannot do that, Troy.
This was a younger me.
Any way to write off them sneakers.
This is a younger me. I educated myself.
That's fair.
But before you do that, I just want to make this point because a lot of people have questions. You can, if the LLC you can always start as an LLC and then transfer over to a C corp, S corp, because that's something that's a common misconception. People think that you have to start with like a C corp or S corp. Like you can start as an LLC, which is the easiest because you don't have to pay yourself salary, mm-hmm. you don't have to have a board, you don't have to have a lot of other requirements that those other ones have, right? Mm-hmm. But then, like you said, once your business really starts to boom, then you can always change the classification over, right?
Absolutely. So I love Great LLCs point. Because I think LLCs are, well, LLCs is what I call it, the flexible entity. Like you can start an LLC and then convert over to an S corp, convert over to a C corp. So I always recommend when you're starting a business to start out as an LLC, because now you can, you know, change over to different entity types, right? And that's another thing. So I'm happy you brought that up, Rashad. You all have to understand that where you start is not where you're going to finish. You have to be willing to switch things up, change things up, right? In order to save on taxes. So you can't be like, okay, I'm an LLC, I'm just gonna remain an LLC. No, you don't remain an LLC. You are going to, you know, you can be then become an S corporation. You can, you know, change your ownership. You can, whatever it is that you need to do to, you know, to fit the growth of your business, you have to do it. We cannot stay stuck.
That's a great point. Great point.
All right. Yeah. So let's talk about these deductions, if we can. Some of the deductions that people can take.
And obviously the sneakers is not one of them.
Sneakers is not one of them.
My uniform code. Come on.
That is not your uniform. It's not a uniform. Okay. So let's talk about let's get Troy's sneakers out the way.
Thank
Troy,
you.
Let's talk about how you can make that as a business owner a deduction. Purchased a pair of sneakers and you put your logo on them, then you can now write them off. Like I've seen you guys with EYL sneakers before.
I mean,
that can now make it a tax deduction, right? But you cannot just purchase sneakers, you know, when you were an employee and just be like, oh, because I went to Foot Locker and I brought these sneakers, they are now a tax deduction, right? And that also goes with clothes. So a lot of people will say, well, how can I write off this clothing? So you can write off, you know, clothing that you purchase. However, you have to stitch your logo in it. And it also can't be excessive. Like you can't say, oh, I'm going to go out and buy a Gucci shirt and then I'm going to like put my business on there and then I'm going to be able to write it off. Right. So it has to be reasonable. You purchase a reasonable shirt. You want to, you know, put your logo on it. You can then, you know, write that off. So that's how that works. All right. But let's talk about expenses, right? What does it mean? Because I do get a lot of outlandish requests and inquiries about what can be written off. And keep in mind, guys, there's hundreds of things that can be written off. This is like the number one question that I get all the time. So I like literally wrote a book about it. Like there's hundreds of deductions I wrote the book because there's literally hundreds of deductions that you guys can write off, right? But let's talk about what classifies something as an expense according to the IRS. It has to be an ordinary and necessary expense. Ordinary meaning ordinarily in your industry, people are spending money on it. Necessary meaning that it is necessary for you to spend this money or incur this expense in order for you to operate your business. Okay, so just to get that out the way. And I always say to people, when you want to start talking about how outlandish the things are, right? Think about if you were sitting across from an IRS agent and you had to explain to them, like, yeah, I needed to purchase this, right? In order to make this happen. Like, does that sound logical, right? Because sometimes people will try to take it to the moon. And I'm like, yeah, no, let's keep it, you know, let's keep it reasonable. That is what the IRS is all about. Things being reasonable and you being able to, and you having your documentation, okay? You need documentation. So let's just talk about a few very popular expenses. So your CPA services, I put me first just because I need you guys to understand that you need a CPA and you need an accountant. And an accountant is going to be able, yes, you'll have to pay your accountant, but it is a tax deduction. And then they should also be able to save you money. So it is a win-win. So any legal services, education. So you guys are going to conferences, investing in your education, purchasing books, investing in mentorships, like all of these things are tax deductible. Why? Because it is a necessary expense in order for you to develop in your business. And that's what I love about business, right? Like we get to really invest in ourselves and it's a tax deduction. So consultants, meals.
So hold on for a minute. This is for business owners only, right?
This is for business owners only.
So if for a business owner, if you were going to InvestFest, let's say, right, and you buy a ticket to InvestFest, and then you know the travel, of course, you got to fly and get a hotel, so you can deduct that.
Absolutely, you can deduct the ticket purchase, the flight, the hotel, the meals while you're there, the transportation, getting to and from. Absolutely,
because it would be for the betterment of your business. You're there and you're promoting your business, you're marketing, you're talking to different people, so. You're right. That's why. Yeah.
And only thing you need to do is you need to keep confirmation that you purchased your ticket. Obviously, and a good thing about all of these things is they're digital, right? So you keep that, you keep your hotel record, and obviously all of your receipts, and it is a tax deduction.
Okay.
Another reason.
There you have it. So you said wasn't that InvestFest, you played yourself. You double played yourself.
All right. So consultants, you said consultants.
Yep. Consultants, meals, travel. So business travel, though. I want to make.
Well, let's talk about the meals.
Okay.
Because there's some that's you got to let's explain right. that. Yeah.
Let's explain meals. Please. Okay, guys. Meals, you can write off 50%. Here's the idea. If you are having a meeting with a client, the IRS says, hey, you can write off. In no way are we paying for your meals, right? But you can write off 50% of it because the idea is that you are having dinner with clients. And then if you are having dinner with clients, then, you know, their portion is deductible. Yours is not. So that's why you can write off 50% of your meals. So 50% of your meals can be deducted. I want you all to understand that this line item is, and thank you, Rashad, for making me go back to this, because this is one of the highest audited line items. And the reason why is because people are like, Rashad, like, oh, let me get that receipt. You have to keep your receipts because the government is like, okay, well, we know, I'm going to tell you, it is the highest audited line items on a business owner's tax return is meals, travel, and vehicle. Okay. And the reason why is because you need extensive documentation to support these things. And when I say extensive, I mean that it's a lot of small transactions, right? That equal up into this big transaction. So for your meals, you need to hold on to your receipts.
So for the receipt thing, though, because most people are not going to carry their receipts. So what's the best option outside of that? Is it to use a credit card, a business credit card, where it can track your transactions?
Or is it an app? I know sometimes people mm-hmm. use an app that takes a picture of the receipt and now it saves it for them digitally.
Absolutely. So it's both. So let's just talk about when you go out and the receipt and what it should have, right? If you have a meal, the receipt that you have. So let's talk about the receipt and then let's talk about how to actually hold on to the receipt and what you need to do. Sure. So for the receipt, right, the receipt needs to have the date, the amount, who you went to dinner with or lunch with or whoever, like who was the client, who did you go with? What did you guys discuss? Right. So you need to have all of these things written down. Like you need to know all of these things. And what I do is when I get the receipt, I'll say, OK, I went out with Rashad and Troy. You know, this is what we, you know, talked about. Like, this is what, you know, like we were meeting to review taxes and then, you know, then I'll, well, all the date, the amount and the place is already on the, it's on the receipt, right? So you just need to identify, like, what was your business reason for being there? That's the only thing that the IRS wants to know, right? What was your business reason for being there? So then from there, Rashad, to your point, you have to hold on to those receipts, right? So you have to hold on to those receipts, but not everyone is going to be able to hold on to a physical receipt. I'm one of those people. Receipts, they crumble, they fade, they're all over the place. So what I do is I take a photo of them. I'll take a photo of them in my phone. And then what I do is I, in my accounting software, so I use QuickBooks. So QuickBooks has a feature where it allows you to upload the receipt and attach it to the transaction. Mm. So that makes it really helpful to do that. Or if you're a person that, you know, let's say you want to upload into your Google Drive, or, and you know what's so crazy, Troy, you gave me that idea one year when you were like, I was asking you for a receipt for something and you were like, oh, let me just go back in my photos and I could just look in my photos because it'll match the date. And so now I give that strategy out to everybody. So thank you, Troy.
Just doing what I can. Just doing what I can.
Thank you. Because a lot of times if you, let's say you know, you'll know when the transaction happens. So if you put the date in the search bar of your phone, you'll be able to pull it up. You'll know exactly who you were with, why you were there. You know, you should have a photo in your phone of the receipt. I wouldn't say don't keep the photos there, right? But originally take the photo in your phone and then, you know, attach it to QuickBooks or upload it in a Google Drive, like whatever your process is, figure out the process and stick to it.
Yeah, I would just add to that. What you're saying is 100% factual. Having documentation is super important. The last thing you want to see at the end of a year, especially if you're a business owner, is uncategorized transactions. It's the most tedious thing you ever have to look at. You don't want to do it. So the best thing to do is make sure, just document it. When you're doing something, document it, label it. When you send the money, just label it. It's going to save yourself a lot of time and energy and hassle. So just document the process.
He's speaking from experience, guys. He knows. He knows. He knows. And then try to do it on a more frequent basis. Like now we're like sending over those uncategorized transactions over to you guys like every 2 to 3 weeks. I know, Trey, I'm so sorry, but it makes it easier to file the taxes later.
I appreciate y'all.
No problem. All right. So let's talk about some deductions, right? Let's talk about some other deductions. So we're clear on that, right? Yep. If it is deductible, I mean, if it is ordinary or necessary, you can expense it as a business owner. All right. So now let's talk about what I want to talk about is the shifting of expenses from your personal over into your business. And this income, this expense shifting really is just saying, hey, these are expenses that you're already utilizing in your business. So if there's expenses that you're already utilizing in your business, how about we, you know, switch those like over to your business because you're utilizing them. So let's talk about the infamous. Let's take it back real quick. Let's talk about vehicles. Let's talk vehicles. Let's take it back and let's start out there. So with a vehicle, if you are leasing your vehicle or if you are financing your vehicle, there's still an opportunity for you to take a tax deduction. So if you're leasing a vehicle, and guys, keep in mind, because I get this question all the time, in order for me to write off my vehicle, do I have to own it? The IRS does not care who owns your vehicle. They don't care if it's you or the business. What they care about is your business use of the vehicle. Okay? So if you have your personal vehicle and you are utilizing it for business, you can still take the tax deduction. Okay, so if you're leasing the vehicle and you utilize the vehicle 50% of, you know, 50% of the time for business, you can take 50% of the lease payments, fuel, repairs, registration. You can take all of those expenses up to 50%. Right. So if you're financing the vehicle, then we have to do what's called depreciation, because now that's an asset. You own it. You're not leasing it and renting it. Right. So you're owning it. So you have to do what's called depreciation. Depreciation, all depreciation is the process of being able to deduct the value of your asset. That's all it is over time. And the IRS says what that time is. They determine what the time is. So they say, okay, well, they'll say a vehicle can be depreciated over 5 years. They'll say a cell phone can be depreciated over 5 years. A home can be depreciated over 27 and a half years. So the IRS gives you what that looks like. So there is no guesswork. So what happens is if you do have a vehicle that you're financing and you utilize it 50%, then you will, your depreciation. So let's just say you had a vehicle, $50,000. What will happen is that you'll be able to depreciate 50% of it. Right. So let's say the tax deduction should have been $10,000 because you divided by five. What would happen is that you would be able to take a tax deduction of $5,000 in depreciation expense on top of your fuel and the maintenance and all those things. Right. That wouldn't change. But it's just about how you treat that actual payment. If it's lease versus if it is finance. Now, let's just go back real quick. Let's take it back. 2019, we talked about 6,000 pound rule.
Mm-hmm.
And at that moment, I broke down how if your vehicle is over 6,000 pounds, that you would be able to write off 100% of it. What happens now is you only can write off 60% of it. So let's just talk about why and all of those things.
Let's do it.
So in 2019, we were still in the window of being able to write off the being able to write off 100%. So the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act implemented what's called bonus.
You made it through all the starts and stops of your tech business. And when you're with Amex Business Platinum, you can count on a network of benefits to keep going, including access to over $1,000 in business and travel value annually. And thanks to 5x membership rewards points on flights and prepaid hotels booked on AmexTravel.com, you and your plugged-in engineers can get rewarded for working in the cloud. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at AmericanExpress.com/AmexBusiness.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
Depreciation, bonus depreciation started on November 27th of 2017, and basically it's going to go all the way into 2027. However, as of 2022, that was the last year you'll be able to take 100%, right? So that's the last year you'll be able to take 100%. Every single year after that is going to decrease by 20% until it phases out. So what that means is in 2023, you only can take 80%. In 2024, you only can take 60%. So if any of you are new to this conversation about bonus depreciation and writing the asset off and, you know, all of those things, and what happens is, you know, you miss the train, but you didn't totally miss it, right? You're still here. You can take 60%. You just can't take 100%. And so next year, it'll be 40%, 20% until it completely phases out in 2027.
So for 6,000 pounds, if you buy a car, a SUV, and it was started by George Bush, I think, originally, mm-hmm. to give incentives to the gas companies.
Yes.
Because SUVs obviously use more gas, so he wanted to incentivize people to buy SUVs, so they started mm-hmm. a rule, the 6,000 pound rule, right? So mm-hmm. okay, if you buy a car that's over 6,000 pounds, let's say a G-Wagon, right? It's over 6,000 pounds?
Yes.
And let's say you buy it for $200,000, right? Mm-hmm. So now you buy a $200,000 G-Wagon for its, so currently in 2024 is 60%, and then in 2025 is 40%. So what does that actually mean? Because most people aren't going to pay $200,000 cash, but let's mm-hmm. say hypothetically they were. Let's say hypothetically they paid $200,000 cash, and let's do what most people would do. They would probably finance the car, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
Or lease the car, finance. So let's kind of explain, like, how, what is 60% of your car payments? What is it?
It's 60% of the value because it is an asset. So because it is an asset, what happens is that you are able to deduct the value of the asset. So with so to your point, it's, if you finance it, it is not the payments, it is the asset value. So if, let's say in your case where you just mentioned someone purchased a G-Wagon, it's $200,000. In 2024, they'll be able to take $120,000 tax deduction, right, against their income. It is now going to, it's a line item, they can take that deduction. Now what happens is the remaining $80,000, they'll depreciate it over the remaining 4 years. Right. So now that will just be a tax deduction that they'll receive over the remaining 4 years. So $20,000 every single year.
Yeah. Now that's okay. if you finance it, right? But also if you
finance it,
leasing is also an option too. And I think we covered that, like obviously on the personal, we said, all right, well, let's figure out this 6,000 pound rule. We did that. But then this year we said, all right, we still need some deductions. So talk about having an EV and how that can help, especially in different states.
Yes. So an EV, the EV credit, and one thing I want to point out to people that the EV credit is a reflection of understanding that when the government wants us to do something, they're going to incentivize us through tax credits, right? It's just as simple. They know it's going to get us moving. They know you give them money, they're going to do it, right? So basically the EV credit, you can get up to $7,500 credit, right? And the difference between a tax deduction and a credit is like cash, like, hey, dollar for dollar, here's the money to you. You can have this up to $7,500, right? For the EV credit. So what happened? Well, now what they're doing, prior to 2024, they were allowing you to file it on your taxes and then you will get the tax refund through your taxes. Now what they are doing, which I think the previous way was better, but they are deducting that EV credit from the value of the vehicle. So you can get the $7,500, but then interest is going to eat it up. So that's why I'm like, yeah, I don't really like that way. But again, it's still a credit. It's still reducing the value of your vehicle by the $7,500. So you guys, if you're interested in an electric vehicle, then go for it. You can get up to $7,500 simply by, getting an electric vehicle.
Yeah. And then some states have, like New York has a drive clean rebate. So if you have an EV car, that's a drive clean rebate. You can get up to another $2,500. So you're talking about almost $10,000.
Yeah, so now you have stateside. Yep. You have your stateside as well. And that's the same thing with solar panels. Like if you ever sat down and talked to someone about solar panels, they're like, no, it's like basically 100% free because you're going to get the tax credit, which is true. You get a tax credit on the federal side and you get a tax credit on the state side, right? Because again, they want us to have these things and they know how to get people moving. Tax deductions, tax credits. It's just the name of the game.
For sure.
All right. So let's talk about kids.
But before we go there, so what is it better to lease a car or is it better to buy a car?
It depends on the car. So it depends on the car. In terms from a tax perspective, it really depends. It really depends because you could have those lease payments and depending on how much your lease payments is, it can still be pretty significant. And that's why I hate to give the answer, like it depends, but this is really one of those things where it's like the factors that I look at is how much are your lease payments? How much is the value of your vehicle? Because sometimes we have to look at things from all sides. So we have to understand, does it cost you more to finance? Do you really want to hold on to this vehicle? Obviously, it's a vehicle, so it is going to depreciate. Do you have plans to sell it? Are you the type of person to sell your vehicles after 1 or 2 years? So for my people that's like in and out of cars consistently, it may make more sense to lease, right? Because you have to look at the tax credit, yes, but then now looking at the value of the vehicle and that trade-in value may not be as worth it, where something like a G-Wagon, it sustains its value, right? So financing it is like a no-brainer because it's like, you know, you can literally go trade it in years from now and it'll still have a really good value. So I do think, it really depends on the value, you know, because again, like you can have a vehicle that's not as much. So that means your depreciation isn't as much, you know? So I would just always compare it, but guys, these are conversations that you should be having with your CPA. They can compare it. Like we can compare that. That's like a tax plan, guys. Hey, should I lease or should I finance?
But either way, it's still a deduction.
Yes, yes, yes. It's still a deduction. So yes, I started out by saying the lease payments is still a tax deduction. When you do it, it'll be, let's say you have two vehicles and you utilize this one vehicle 100% of the time for business. 100% of the lease payments will be a tax deduction. 100% of the fuel, the registration, all of those things will be still be a tax deduction.
Yep.
If you lease.
All right. So let's talk about the children.
Get these kids, man.
Let's put these kids to work. All right, let's talk about hiring your children. I know that we've talked about this a lot in terms of like hiring your children, or you guys may see like hiring your children and what that all means and, you know, how to really maximize. And I love the concept of hiring your children, but I want to allow you guys, and I want to talk about taking it a step further and really investing in your child's future and making it like a triple tax deduction. So let's talk about hiring your children, right? So hiring your children in the year 2024, you can pay them up to $14,600. Okay. What you cannot do is you cannot contribute, take that money and contribute it towards food and shelter. So you cannot have them work and then say, you owe me rent and pay for your own food. You cannot do that. Okay. But what you can do with the money is you can pay for extracurricular activities. It's their money. But what you should be considering and what you should be thinking about is taking it and investing it into a Roth IRA. So if you take that money and you invest it into a Roth IRA, here's how you're able to get a triple tax deduction. One, it's a tax deduction from your business. Then when your child receives the $14,600, it is not a tax. It's not taxable, right? It's not taxable because it's under the standard deduction amount. And then what happens when you invest in a Roth IRA, it is going to be able to take advantage and take into account compound interest, right? So now you're building a retirement account and you're able to do that. And when it's time to get the money out of that account, it's going to be tax-free. So that's why I love the conversation about paying your children, because now it's like, all right, now let's think about paying your children and taking it a step further versus just saying, oh, okay, it's just a tax deduction. No, let's get a triple tax deduction out of this, right? So I think that I love.
Let's fully explain that. I know you're gonna go through like an example for that, but so for parents, like, you know, if you have a business, you can pay $14,600 to your child. So the benefit with that, like you said, is that if you're going to give your child money anyway, mm-hmm. then you might as well give them money and have them as an employee. You don't have to go through all of the, like, have them on like officially on a payroll, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a tax deduction to you, as opposed to you just giving them allowance. Now you don't benefit from that.
That should be done through an LLC, because I get that a lot and I get that question a lot. That should be done through an LLC, not an S corporation, because if you have an S corporation, you have to put them on payroll, right? That has to be done through an LLC.
So it's tax deduction to the business. You save money, and then it's tax-free income for them. Mm-hmm. Now, they do have to actually be able to perform a job, right?
Absolutely.
That's obvious.
Yeah.
So, but there is also... there's no age requirement, right? It just has to make sense, right?
So there isn't an age requirement, but yeah, like you said, it has to make sense. I typically tell people, like, try to stay between like 7 and 17. Mm-hmm. But if you have a child that's younger, and let's say they are able, let's say, listen, these kids know how to take photos now. They know how to work phones, computers. They know. So if you could hire them and have them help you with that, that's great. If they could be a model.
But that's what I was going to say, a model. If you have a kid,
they could be a model.
If you could have a kid that's younger, that's a model, and you could pay them for models and services, because, you know, you got to. Because there's always somebody that's going to try to figure out how something doesn't work. And those are usually people that have never done anything. So it's like, well, you know, technically you can't have a kid working if they're not work. That's obvious. That's obvious. But it's like you're trying to find ways around to make it not work when it's a workable model. Yep. Right. Like if you have a child. 11, 12, 13, they're old enough to perform tasks. Mm-hmm. They can post on social media. They can come with you. They can be an assistant. They can do a variety of different things, right? It's like you're trying to talk yourself out of this, how this doesn't make sense. It's not difficult to work. That's not a difficult thing to do. And there's a variety of different jobs that you can do. Now, for a one-year-old, it's going to be difficult, obviously, to have them as a computer programmer. That's not something that is beneficial. But like I said, I mean, you could pay somebody to be a model. Yep. At any age, really. And the benefit with that as just a regular, because you could put money into a Roth IRA for a regular kid, but that's not if you don't have a business, but they have to actually work a job that's hiring them and they have to be of working age. So you have to have working papers to work a job like 13, 14, something like that, depending on what state you are. But you can hire your child at a younger age than that, right? And it's more flexible. They don't have to go to CPS from, you know, 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock every night. Like, they can just work for you and you can dictate what they do and tell them what to do. And now, so they're gaining real life experience from working for you, and you're saving money. They're gaining money. It's a win-win situation. So that's very important for people to understand. Even if you take a trip, like, you know, if they're working for you, then if you go somewhere with them, then that could be all counted in the business trip, right? If it's business related.
Yep.
So that's real powerful. Like I said, as opposed to just parents going to give their kids money anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So
you gotta pay for some, you're paying for Roblox, you paying for sneakers, you paying for extracurricular activities, outings with friends. They have their own money. Pay them, make them work. I've been working since I was six. So
yeah, come on, we Jamaican. I've been working longer than that. Nah, but, I mean, think about what you're setting your kids up for, right? Like, just with the information. If you 7 to 17, you do 14, 6 for 10 years, almost 150,000. Like, how many of us had 100 anything waiting for us at the age of 17 or 18, where they're about to make a decision of whether they're going to school, or now maybe I have enough money to start my own business, right? This is the seed round for my business. It's ready and in my account. It just sets your family up. And I've got two kids, so now that's twice. So now they both have the same amount. And obviously there's different avenues that they can invest, but just think about what you're setting your kids up for at the age of 17. It's priceless.
So you're going to go through an example, right?
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about and just put numbers to it, because I find that when you talk numbers, people really understand, you know, something as you know, small as putting dollars away into a Roth IRA. So one thing to note, guys, is that when you take money out of a Roth IRA, when it's time for retirement, it is going to be tax-free, right? So you're going to receive 100% of those payments. You do not have to worry about it being taxed. And the idea behind a Roth IRA being like non-taxable or tax-free when it's retirement age and it's time for you to pull it out, is simply that you've done it with quote unquote after tax dollars, right? Which is different from like a traditional IRA, right? When you talk traditional IRA, you're pretty much talking more so like, hey, you're contributing to this with pre-tax dollars. So if you're contributing to this with pre-tax dollars, then, you know, obviously they're like, all right, well, we're going to get our taxes one way or another. But the great thing about hiring your children is you can take that money, put it into a Roth IRA. And then what happens is, let's just say you started your child out and then your child now has that concept and that mindset of, hey, I now have to contribute to my Roth IRA. What would happen if they invested freaking $7,000 from the age of 7 when you hired them? I didn't even do from 1, right? Let's just do from 7 to age 65. The total contributions inside of that Roth IRA would have been $406,000, but the value would be $5,308,000. So I want you guys to really understand that compound interest is something that we need to take advantage of. Understanding taxes and how we can minimize taxes is something that we need to really lean into, and really figuring out like, okay, well, if this is a tax deduction, how can I really take advantage of this? Because so many people are like, okay, I can pay my child. Yes, that's great. You can pay your child, but how about you pay your child and you invest into a retirement account? You teach them about this retirement account. And then it's, you know, also going to be instilled in their mind that they have to keep this retirement account going. And then when it's retirement age, they're going to be set for life. I know so many people want to set their kids up for life, right? So we need to focus and lean more into things like this.
That's vitally important. And it could be invested in a variety of different things too, right? So it's like, even the rate of return that you get is all dependent. So just another example, because people might say, well, all right, well, you know, people are always going to find ways to try to put holes in things. So it's like, all right, let's say, let's make it even more realistic standpoint, where we just go from age 10 to 18, right? So you're just putting money. They're not even putting money. They don't even put a dollar in after. You only put money in for them. They don't put no money in for themselves at all. So let's say you put $5,000 in, which is even lower than the maximum amount that you can put in. If you put $5,000 in every year for your child from ages 10 to 18, and then they just left it alone. They didn't do anything. At their age 60, if there was a 7% rate of return, which is a very realistic number, they would have $1 million, $1,026,000 to be exact. Now, assuming that it was a 10% rate of return annual average, which, I mean, that's what, if you look at what the S&P has done over the last 20 years, that's what has actually been closer to 10 than 7, then that would be $3.7 million. So this is, people are like, well, they got to wait. I already know the pessimist, so I'm already answering the question.
I get it.
So it's like, oh, you got to wait till 60. Who wants to wait? Okay, well, if somebody had $1 million for you and you did nothing for it outside of working relatively minimum work as a child or your parents, if somebody had $1 million for you when you were 60 years old, would you be mad about that? Tax-free, by the way. No. You don't have to pay tax on it. Would that be something that you would be mad, discouraged about? Because 9 times out of 10, when you get to retirement, and we're going to talk about retirement plans, but most people don't have anywhere close to $1 million when they get to retirement after they work their whole entire life. So most people work their whole entire life and don't have $1 million or more. When this, you could have had $1 million just from having your parents put money away for a couple of years when you was a child, and let alone other money that you put into it, a Roth IRA as you're an adult, or an IRA or 401k or other type of retirement plans. Like, this is just the extra bonus that was set up for you when you were young. So it's just important to plan. It's important to plan for the future because of the compounded interest. Like, you could really literally make your child a millionaire with a relatively little bit amount of money. So a little amount of money for a short period of time. And it's almost guaranteed as long as you follow those principles. So that's something that I think should be important. Because like you said, you get the tax deduction anyway. And they still can spend money too. So it's not like if you put $5,000, if you pay them $14,000, well, they still have $9,000 surplus. So they can still have discretionary income that they can utilize to buy stuff for themselves, Jordans or whatever they want to buy, that you're actually paying for anyway, but at least you're getting a tax deduction. So it's just about being smart. You know, the tax code was always made for business owners and investors. It wasn't made for employees. And when you understand that, then you understand why it's so important to establish a business and to be an investor.
That's a fact. I love when you guys validate the things that I say.
I mean, do you really? I mean, people talk about generational wealth and sustainable wealth, but like, if you're not taking these steps to create it, how is it going to exist? So like, these are just very, like, that is generational. Like, that's something that you get at 18, your parents done for you. When you have kids, you should be doing the same thing. That's generational, right? Like, we got to look in those lenses. But you brought up retirement plans. So let's talk about some retirement contributions, because that's something, again, taxes, they're not going to teach you. Retirement plans, they forget about it. Like, this is just like unspoken language for so many. So let's dive into that.
They just literally, you start, even when you start a job, they're like, yeah, here, click your elections. What do you want to do? It's like, what? I would never forget when I first started corporate. I'm like, what? I don't know. What? Well, how am I going to make the best decision? Anybody for me to consult with? No. You just have to choose.
They tell you, like, yo, there's a guy coming on Thursday, and he's coming during your lunch break. So if you have time, just go sit with him, and then he'll explain some things to you, and then you never see the guy for the rest of the year.
Yeah, yep. That's a fact.
This is for people. A lot of stuff that we went over so far was only for entrepreneurs. So this is for people that's not entrepreneurs also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. So let's talk about retirement contributions, because we do need to think about the future. Right. So, Rashad, you've mentioned it, a few times, especially when we've spoken just in terms of like retirement and do we even have enough money, and, you know, really understanding that and knowing what your limits are. Like, so many people aren't aware or have an understanding of, OK, well, this is how much, you know, I can actually contribute. And am I actually maxing it out? So one of the things that I mentioned as it relates to employees earlier was, hey, you need to max out your retirement contribution. I mean, your retirement contribution. And then for my business owners, I need you all to take retirement a lot more serious. Right. So we have thousands of clients in Brooks Alliance, and I can tell you that retirement is not at the forefront. If we mention it, then it's like, yeah, I want to retire. Like, I want to have retirement. But because everyone's so like consumed with, you know, getting their business together and, you know, and serving their clients and doing all these things, they're not necessarily focused on their retirement. And it is a tax deduction. It is a tax deduction. You can match it, right? So you can literally put yourself on payroll. You can contribute to a retirement account and have your company match it the same way that they do at your, you know, when you were working W-2. So I need you all to lean more into retirement and understand that this is really, really important. And we can't just be like, oh, well, I'm going to make enough money through my business. Wealthy people still plan for retirement. It doesn't matter how much money you plan on having. You still have to plan for retirement. So let's just talk about your contribution limit. So for all of my 401ks, 403bs, 457Bs, your contribution limit for 2024 is $23,000. It surprised me that they only increased these limits by $500. Like, I feel like they were pretty reasonable with a lot of different things that they increased this year. They increased it a lot more than they typically do, but anyway, it's up $500 from 2023. So if you're doing a catch-up contribution, obviously, Rashad, what's the age if you're over 50?
You get to do 50.
Yeah. So if you're over 50, then you can contribute an additional $8,000. So traditional IRA contribution, Roth IRA contribution is $7,000. So if you are doing the catch-up contribution of $8,000, I mean, if you are doing a catch-up contribution, you can contribute $8,000. And then HSA accounts. So I talked about this earlier, right? Like, hey, saying, hey, these are things that you can actually invest. I mean, you can actually contribute to help you, you know, just save on taxes. So the contribution limit for 2024 is $4,150. And if you have a family, it is $8,300. All right. So let's take a step back and because there's a lot of people that have W-2 income and they also have retirement income, right? So one thing as a business owner that I want you all to understand is that your max contribution, or everyone, your max contribution in terms of other investment vehicles and everything for the year for 2024 is $69,000. So let's just talk about it. And I'll just use a business owner. The business owner, they're like, all right, well, listen, this business, I want to contribute more than $23,000. You told me that I can contribute up to $69,000, but then you're telling me that my 401k contribution limit is it's $2,300. Like, it's not making sense, right? So what does that mean? What that means is that, again, I told you guys, where you start is not necessarily where you're going to finish. So when you're a smaller business owner, you may be looking into things like solo 401ks, traditional IRAs, contributing to Roth IRAs. But what happens is, now once you start making more money, now you're considering, hey, I need to maybe consider investing into a SEP IRA, right? Or, hey, I need a 401k plan. And keep in mind, guys, this falls along the lines of, you are not going to, where you start is not where you're going to finish, right? Because having a 401k is a little bit more pricier than obviously doing like a simple IRA or traditional IRA. It is even a little bit more cheap. It's cheaper than having a SEP IRA. But again, once you start having employees and when you start making more money and you need to start doing more things, a 401k is a little bit more advantageous, because what happens is, you now can not only have your 401k and pay yourself, but you also can do what's called profit sharing, right? So while the max of that 401k is $23,000, for the remaining balance, you can do a profit share and contribute into that 401k, into your retirement. Right. So now it's a situation where now you can contribute up to that $69,000 every single year. So I think that it's important that we understand that there are different retirement accounts, and you just have to figure out, like, okay, well, where am I right now? And what's the best retirement account for me right now? And I think that if we understand that, then we'll, you know, definitely be able to take advantage of the tax code and be able to invest for retirement.
Can we just talk about real estate quickly? Because I know there's cost segregation. There's a lot of different stuff like that. So I know that that's something that people might probably want to be interested in.
Absolutely. So what I'm going to do here is, I'm not sure if you guys caught my presentation. I know you guys were going crazy during InvestFest. But I did a presentation during InvestFest, and I want to talk about real estate and cost segregation and what it means. And a lot of times people are like, listen, I need to make a change. I need to do something. I need to invest in real estate. But what happens is they may get between depreciation expenses and so between depreciation expenses and between the deductions of operating the real estate, they may just come off of it like being tax-free, right? So you may just like be tax-free. You can get that real estate income. But a lot of times people have business income, right? You have business income that you're like, listen, I need to offset this business income and I need an asset that's going to help me do that. So what exactly do I need to do? Right. So that's great. I was able to, you know, utilize, and I say all the time, real estate is one of those amazing, amazing tax deductions where you can win in real life and lose on paper. And all that means is that in real life, you're bringing in money. But on paper, because of depreciation, which we talked about, we're talking about vehicles, you're able to now lose on paper, right? You're now most likely reporting a loss because you're able to take all those deductions. So basically, what we do to take it a step further, right? So all of my people that is like, listen, I need a higher depreciation expense. So therefore, I'm now able to, you know, go and deduct all of my, you know, deduct my real estate losses and have it offset my business income, right? So how can we do that? So we do what's called cost segregation. Cost segregation is pretty much just a study, right? It's a process that looks at each element of your property. It is not something that you can go off and do by yourself. It is an actual analysis that has to be done of your property. And then when it comes to the cost segregation, what happens is you can also, so we talked earlier about bonus depreciation, right? So bonus depreciation pretty much up until 2022, it was 100%. But then up until, now it's only 60%. But what happens is the IRS says, okay, every single asset has its specific asset class, right? Like it says, hey, this is a building can be written off over 27 and a half years. Personal property can be written off over 5 years. Land improvements can be written off over 15 years. But how do we utilize bonus depreciation to like magnify or give us more of a depreciation expense? What we can do is, so in this example, we have a house that's $500,000. Keep in mind, guys, you cannot take bonus depreciation on a building and you cannot depreciate land. Okay. So in this example, you see that the home is $500,000. The building is $250,000. You're going to still divide that over 27 and a half years. You cannot take bonus depreciation on it. So the depreciation expense there is going to be $9,382. Then you have personal property, $87,000. The depreciation, you can take 60% on that. So that's going to be $52,200 depreciation expense that you'll be able to take off of the personal property of your home. Right. And people are like, oh, my God, like all of this, like, how can you break it up like this? But you break it up because your house is not just a building. Right. Your house is made up of different things. So let's dissect the property and really maximize on this depreciation expense. Then you have land improvements. So this is like your driveway. So that is $25,000. Depreciation expense, you could take 60% of it, is $15,000. That's going to give you a total depreciation expense of $76,582, right? So now, if let's just say you did not do cost segregation and you just said, okay, well, I have my home of $5,000 and then I had land of $130,000. I need to back that out. You would have about a $13,500 expense, depreciation expense. But when you do cost segregation, now you're able to have a depreciation expense of $76,000, right? And so now what that does is, let's say for my people that are, let's just say you're in real estate and this is what you're doing real estate full time. And let's just say you're investing in another business that's more passive, right? You don't really have to be that active in that business. But you have this money that's coming in. You need something to offset that money. And so why not utilize cost segregation? Why not dig deeper and really understand, like, okay, how can I really utilize the tax code and these things to my advantage? And so many people are entitled to these things, but they're not aware that they're available. So I love cost segregation. I love real estate. It just helps. I love depreciation. Anything depreciation is involved in, I love. It like just starts wiping stuff out. So I love it.
That's a fact. That's a fact. You know, one of the things we always hear from the news is estate tax. And we've seen a lot of our celebrities fall victim to it because the planning wasn't done in place, or they thought the planning was done and it wasn't. This is a conversation, again, that doesn't get talked about. Like, how do we prepare when we're not here? We talked about life insurance, but estate planning is important, and estate tax is just as important. Can you touch on that?
Absolutely. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about estate taxes. So what people are not aware of is that there is something called death taxes, right? So estate taxes, death taxes, these are taxes that you have to pay when you die if your assets is over a certain amount. Okay, so if you are an individual and your assets is over if you are an individual and your assets are over $13,610,000, you have to pay estate taxes. And what I want to let you guys know that estate taxes are higher than income taxes. Okay, estate taxes go all the way up to 40%. So I think it's the most ridiculous thing ever. Like, how do you tax me more when I'm dead than when I was alive working? Right? It's insane. But this is the name of the game. So if you are a couple, if your assets is $27 million or more, you do have to pay death taxes. So a lot of times when we're seeing these celebrities and they haven't set up anything, and now it's a situation where, you know, they're now paying death taxes. Now it becomes now they owe death taxes. And now people are like, oh my God, they owe taxes? Or, oh my God, their estate has been held up in probate for all this time. Like, why? What's happening? But they fail to plan. Right. So as I mentioned, when we're thinking about estate taxes are higher. As you can see, it goes all the way up to 40%. So let's just say if you're an individual and your assets are $14 million, right? What's happening is that you're now at 40%, right? Because it says over $1 million. So I just think that we have to understand that while we're having this conversation of estate taxes and estate planning, like, we have to understand exactly what we are going to do. The taxes are going to be due. And another
is that an exemption of, like, okay, the first $13,600,000 you don't get taxed on. Mm-hmm. Then this scale starts at that, starting at zero.
Yes.
So more than 14.6, that's when you hit 40%?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
14 turn to 8 real quick.
Yeah. Okay. So now it's a situation
It's 14. The 13 million was never going to get taxed, right? It's the 14. Like, if you have 15 million, then that $1 million you have to pay for. So you have to pay $400,000, right?
Yes.
But the difference.
It's the overage.
Yes, it's the overage. Yes. It's whatever's in excess of the $13 million.
Thank you. Okay.
Yes. So anything in excess of that, right? And so again, someone has to pay the taxes. So many times we're like always thinking like, oh my God, like, I don't want to pay taxes. And I've heard people say, look, I ain't going to start this additional business, or I'm not going to do certain things because I don't want to pay taxes. So it may be somebody in here, you know, that's like, oh, well, you know what? I'm never going to try to get my assets to $13 million because I don't want to have to pay. I mean, you know, $15 million, right? Because I don't want my family to have to pay. No, somebody's going to have to pay. You know this. So you get a life insurance policy. You put your assets in a trust. You actually plan for that. That's a part of estate planning. Thinking about your taxes is a part of estate planning. So we can't just be like, oh, okay, we're going to have insurance. And another thing, stop dying with tax debt, because guess what? Before anybody get paid, the IRS is coming for their money, right? And that don't matter if you over $13 million or not. You could be at $100,000, right? They will come for their money. So you guys have to make sure that you all aren't leaving debt, and you're handling your business. If you know, you're serious about building wealth and starting businesses and, you know, building assets, we have to focus on taxes.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your time. Very valuable information. So much information. People don't learn about this kind of stuff. Like, how can they follow you? What's your Instagram, website, all of that information if they want to kind of, you know, tap in with you?
Absolutely, guys. Tap in with me. My Instagram is Miss Business 101. So that's ms.business101. My website is missbusiness101.com. Very consistent. So you can follow me on Instagram, on TikTok under the same exact handle.
There you have it.
Well, we appreciate you as always.
Thank you.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
All right.
Have a good night, y'all. Love is love.
Good night, guys.